How you feeling today? It's Thursday. The show's Insight. My name's Mark Farrell on the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks for checking us out every Thursday, every day. Gary Noah follows me at noon today. Promise you no talk about the primaries, caucuses, the burn, the craziness that's ensuing between the GOP party. It's just great to sit back and watch it all fall apart. It's really funny. Got a great show coming your way. You're going to meet Dara Padwick-Audick. She's a producer for a new show, She's Got Grit, about female athletes with disabilities who compete at the highest levels. Really compelling stuff. We're going to meet her in just a few minutes. We're going to be talking about some mental health issues and a lot of other compelling stuff. Selfie society. I just am really, really at my wit's end with selfies and people just boasting about everything they've done, who they are, what they're eating. Enough. Come on. We don't give a shit. Come on. Move on. Move on. Did you see the Grammys on Monday? I thought they were pretty good. I didn't watch the entire show because I had some other projects going on in the interim. But I watched enough of it to, you know, thought it was a good show. The thing I thought was one of the highlights was Stevie Wonder. I'm sure if you didn't see this, you read about it. He took a great opportunity before announcing the Song of the Year to make a really powerful statement about people with disabilities. And he's done this part before where when he's at a reception or award ceremony, a big event, and he rips open the envelope. Obviously, it's in Braille because he can't read, but he can read Braille, of course. And he starts by saying something like this.
You all can't read this, huh? You can't read it. You can't read Braille.
Way to go, Stevie. Pretty cool. And he held up the envelope and the winning name. Obviously, couldn't read it. And he progressed to go on and say, we need to make every single thing accessible to every person with a disability. So way to go, Steve-O. I thought that was very, very cool. Took a national platform, you know, a very, very highly rated TV show with a lot of movers and shakers, and also with a lot of creative people, which I thought is even more important because maybe it influenced someone, songwriters, musicians, to maybe incorporate, I don't know, some aspect of this into music. Because obviously throughout history, music involves a lot of politics, a lot of personal feelings, etc. Because what is music without emotion? And certainly when you have a disability or care for something so passionately about disabilities or whatever the case may be. Or like our previous host, she cares about food. So maybe you write about food. Bhavani, that's her name. Bhavani. How do you spell Bhavani? Have to check that out. But anyway, so it was really, really cool of Stevie Wonder to do that. You know, he's done a similar thing like that before. But again, the Grammys, I thought it was a great platform. Got a really good laugh and chuckle. But the statement is really, really true. And I also saw something very cool yesterday on the internet on LinkedIn. There was a crane operator that actually had his crane modified because he's in a wheelchair. So the actual crane portion of the cab, it sits on the rolling wheels, lifts off and actually goes down to the ground. And this was made accessible by his, I guess, the owner of the company, or obviously paid a lot of money to retrofit this crane. So this individual, I'm not sure if he was disabled prior to using this heavy operational machinery. But needless to say, he is employed and doing what he loves to do. And it's really, really cool. If I find the picture, I will put it up on our page, on the Insight page on PRN.FM. But it just goes to show you, I mean, that's obviously an extreme example of making an accommodation for someone at work. But it's fantastic because there are so many accommodations that can be made. Of course, the ADA institutes law when a company basically does renovations to a place or makes a brand new building. They have to comply to new standards. But there are many, many more things, including just getting into the building itself, that whether it's talking computers, larger screens or cameras that actually blow up material, People with prosthetics need certain modifications to their desk and work setup environment. So it really runs the gamut. So the point is that, you know, there's so much room to be made in terms of that area. And if you're an employer, maybe like more of the Steve Jobs-ish in the world, the Bransons and the Zuckerbergs, if they really embrace this and make a model, you know, within their company, you know, they have great models because I think like Branson's motto is, you know, really train and educate your employees and then they'll never want to leave. You make them so invaluable that they're going to be kind of leveraged to leave by other people, lured to leave, but they won't want to leave because they're in such an environment that's inviting and it feels almost like family. Well, no, if it felt like my family, then I'd want to leave. Well, all right, maybe not the best example, but you know what I mean? Like Google. I mean, if you want to, you know, a donut or, you know, some tofu in the afternoon or whatever the case may be, you just walk out the end of your office and it's right there. They make a very convivial environment where there's, you know, basketball, games, things to take off your mind on things. And that actually has been proven that it really generates creative thinking, reinforces it. And I think that's a great thing, aspect, idea, concept for people in that leadership role that have the monies to create an environment exclusively. Maybe even just go like really extreme for people with disabilities. There's a great company I just read about recently that's based out in Seattle. It's called the Lighthouse. I think it's called the Lighthouse International Inc. And this gentleman's name is David Kirk, the president, who I believe is blind as well. He has a company, a manufacturing company, and I believe most of the goods that are manufactured are for the armed services, different divisions. And I'm not totally confident in saying this, but I think at least 80-90% of his staff are blind, visually impaired, or have some substantial disability. And here they are cranking out some really, really great product. And they go through, you know, extensive training, just like anyone else who's manufacturing, working in a manufacturing environment, plant, et cetera, to guarantee quality control. But here's an example of someone who walks the walk, talks the talk, who's blind and created this platform, generating, you know, obviously he's got gargantuan contracts, I'm sure, with the government for the services, producing backpacks, et cetera. So this is not just a, you know, all right, generating money machine and let's, you know, do some good for the armed services, make a good product and move on. Not only are they doing that, but they're incorporating the disabled workforce, which is fantastic. Now, if you think about it, now the boomers, they're aging. Hey, we're all aging, but the boomers are a huge, huge generation who are retiring. And they're really going to dictate what's kind of needed on so many levels. You know, think about the recreational needs. So vast, travel alone. I think the Lonely Planet has done a recent, as a matter of fact, I want to get them on the show. The Lonely Planet is a travel guide, and I believe they have a digital edition as well. But they have a recent edition on travel for people with disabilities. So going back to the boomer issue, but for health, you know, workplace, for people who want to work part-time, I mean, this is such a gargantuan population that they could really dictate what's needed. You know, never has there been a better time. I always tell people when I speak to companies and schools, whether they have, first of all, I have to say that every time I get up on stage, I say that we all are disabled. Obvious or not, to different and various degrees, but we all have a disability. And as we age, we become more disabled. Like when you see me, it's not apparent that I have a visual impairment. When you see somebody who has bipolar disorder, or you see somebody who has MS or CP, whatever the case may be, they may not necessarily be obvious, but we all have disabilities. It may even be in the way we think or the way we perceive, real or perceived disabilities. We have an item that we certainly have and can be considered to be disabled. So I always say that technology is playing such a crucial role nowadays. I mean, who wants to be disabled? You never raise your hand and be like, hey, I want to be disabled. Yeah, 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 sign me up. It's a great thing. Maybe I can claim an extra dependent on my income tax. No, you don't want to do that. But if you are disabled, and depending, on, of course, on your disability, there's never been a better time to be disabled because the technology aspects are really endless. for example, like prosthetics for above the knee, below the knee, go up to the knee. I mean, they're really amazing. They cost a lot of money, a boatload of money, and a lot of times insurance companies will cover them depending on their use. I mean, they're not going to give you like a cheetah foot. A cheetah is a manufacturer like sprinting foot, carbon fiber. That are used for sprinters and runners and maybe high jumpers, for someone who just kind of needs to, you know, amble around, get around, go to the grocery store, et cetera. But for someone who's very healthy and active, and soon we're going to talk about this in a different extreme with our producer and writer of She's Got Grit, Dara. She's going to be coming on momentarily. But my point is that there's so much technology out there for people who have prosthetic devices. You know, they're run and generated by computers, microchips, amazing. Cameras implanted in the brain, or that feeds information to the brain for people who are blind or visually impaired. That can give them some stimulation, some light, some sense of sight. Actually, that's something that I spoke to my doctor about, but it's still kind of in its infantile stage. And I don't think it would benefit me a great deal right now. But what could benefit me right there now, they're in clinical trials, which is, it's kind of funny because my doctor started saying, well, we cured like 3 blind mice. I'm like, I heard this before. Isn't it a nursery rhyme? He's like, no, bear with me. So they cured some blind mice by injecting some healthy cells, blind cells, bad affected cells into the mice. And it's kind of a long story, but long story short is that it works. And so they're actually going to clinical trials with this study. And unfortunately, the bad news for me, but very good news for a lot of people who have my condition, congenital retinoschisis, which is Latin for splitting of the retina, which means that they will have some restored vision down the road. Unfortunately, with mine is such an anomaly within this anomaly of a disorder that it won't really impact me too much. And as a matter of fact, to the point where probably they wouldn't recommend that I would take part in some such a thing. Well, bummer. Oh, well. But at least people are going to benefit. And you never know what's going to be developed out of this, because most of science's advances are things that are byproducts that develop or arise and are like, wow, okay, well, this could be applied to X, Y, or Z, or a different condition, a heart condition or blood pressure or diabetes, whatever the case may be. So right now, again, it's such a great time, you know, to have a disability because of the probability of either getting something that's going to make it easier to live with or cure it altogether. Or certainly, you know, there's steps, obviously, to making a cure, but the fact that it can make your life much more accessible, tolerable, easy. I mean, for me, I have a phone now, you know, the iPhone. I don't have the latest one, that I can make the contacts in there really big. I think it's like 16-point font, my iPad. And as I mentioned a few weeks ago, I can drive a car because I wear telescopic devices like a surgeon wears. But I saw in a commercial recently, because I can't read my speedometer in a car, and it sounds like, okay, what the hell are you doing driving a car if you cannot read the speedometer? Well, they're small. They're really small. Come on. You know that. If you don't have your glasses on or contacts in, you're kind of like, oh, you have to really kind of focus down on it. Maybe not, and good for you. But for me, it's an issue. I always kind of feel, you kind of have a vibe on how far and how fast you should be going in a residential neighborhood or on a major highway. We're on the Autobahn for our Germany listeners. But anyway, there's an application now that I'm telling you, it works amazingly well. It's an application that uses obviously GPS and tracks your speed. So my speedometer on my iPhone is probably standing about, 3 or 4 inches tall. And it's white lettering on a black background. It is gargantuan. It's like the one my mother has in her car that comes standard. And she paid, $50,000, $60,000 for the car she's driving. And I got mine for the price of an iPhone. Pretty cool. So the point, going back to technology and impacting people with disabilities, the boomer generation, going back to Stevie Wonder's point that, you know, we need to make every single thing accessible to every person with a disability. Is this a huge task undergoing? Absolutely. But I don't see any reason why we cannot accomplish this. Certainly for major disabilities, for people who really want to be active and partake in the workforce, who will contribute to our gross national profit and product. I mean, these are invaluable things. Paying taxes, creating, you know, maybe revolutionary items or products or services. So we would really be discounting a major population. 55 million people in the United States have a disability. And of course, they run the gamut in terms of, you know, whether it's visual impairment, diabetic, amputee, PTSD, you name it. But it's a big number. It's a really big number. So I want to move on to something that's been bothering me for a while. I guess since I've been on Facebook, you know, for a couple of years, and I use it for not a personal outlet at all. I use it just for business as well as I do for LinkedIn. So it's all for my speaking business, and or sometimes I post things, of course, about the radio show here, but I don't post anything about certainly my kids. I just don't think it's a safe outlet. Me personally, I'm not ridiculing anybody else. Me personally, I don't want to post pictures of my kids, their birthdays, you know, all this private information that I just feel that, you know, should remain within the family and with friends. Yes, you can create your private network, et cetera, but it just seems like a lot of work and just not really interested in doing it because, you know what, I can send you pictures. You can come actually see for a visit my kids, or I'll come see you for a visit, right? So I just never have I witnessed a nation just so impressed with itself for what, you know, posting a picture of yourself in the morning. Oh, good morning, Facebook family. Come on. Really? Are you that lonely? Are you that bored? Jesus Christ. Go on match.com and get a girlfriend or a boyfriend or something. It's just crazy. Selfie, the word selfie alone just implies what a narcissistic society we have. I mean, we created a word for someone who, you know, has an excuse to take a picture of themselves. And we have actually products to go along with this, selfie sticks, you know, apparatuses. I mean, it opens up the whole realm of product development for people who want to be even more vain. You know, it just selfie. I just think of conceit when I hear that word. Raise your hand if you agree. Wow. That's a lot. So are these people, are you, if you do this, do you lack confidence? Does it, I don't know. Or you possess too much. Maybe it goes, the pendulum swings too much the other way. I just don't get it. Like, why would you think that people would be so impressed with, you know, listen, I get it. You go on vacation, you take a picture of this beautiful, you know, tranquil and turquoise ocean, and you're like, wish you were here or something like that. Totally get it. But the, you know, consistent pictures of you doing X, Y, or Z, and this is what I did then, and yada, yada. And also, putting pictures up from the past. I know Facebook actually has like a kind of like a rotating sliding show every so often of what you've done a year or two ago, but you don't have to comment it. And, oh, look what I did then. And, yeah, well, okay, good for you. Great. I don't even look at my old vacation photos. Do you think I want to look at yours? Jesus Christ. I mean, do people find confirmation, you know, from having a Facebook friend? I mean, studies have shown that, you know, people who actually have Facebook friends out of 500, they really only have like 3 actual friends. It was a crazy study. You know, it just makes me think of like just narcissistic behavior. You know, why post things on there on everything that you've done, thought, want to do, you know, kids, parents, I don't know. What kind of example are you setting for your kids if you're a parent? You know, oh, here's a picture of me. I know I have some friends and they have a couple kids and the wife posts things constantly. If I didn't know any better, she is a good parent, but if I didn't know any better, I would have thought that she's single and completely self-absorbed. Well, she is kind of self-absorbed, but the fact is I just don't get it. So, you know, give me a call. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, or hit me up at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. Tell me why you post selfies or why you're against them, whether you agree or disagree, because I love to hear all kinds of viewpoints because, hey, that's what we're about here. So I just don't, you know, and kind of like, when does it stop, you know? change your, this is the funny thing, is people who always change profile pictures, you know, you always see this, there's always a, like a handful of people, and I guess they don't know how to change their settings where if you do change your profile picture, it doesn't go out. I think there is a setting for that, but they probably do know how to set that, but don't care. It's kind of like you're living for likes, like, oh my God, I got 516 likes on my photo or my post of me eating, you know, popcorn at during the trailer of the new Superman Spider-Man movie. Who gives a shit? I don't care. Again, so this is just my perspective. You know, I use it strictly for professional reasons. You know, there are people in my family who don't, and they respect my privacy, and don't, post my kids' names. They'll just use my name if it's tagged in a photo, et cetera. And that's totally cool. But, it's just an interesting statement of who we are, especially the millennials. But then again, it's not just millennials because it spills over to people my age. How old am I? I don't know. I'm not going to tell you. I'll tell you when I reveal it on September 24th when I'm on the air here, because it's going to be a big ass party. So get ready. It's a leap year, man. Okay, I digress for a second. It's a leap year. It's really throwing off my planned birthday party because last year my birthday was on a Friday. So this year, of course, it was supposed to be on a Saturday. My wife and I were like, yeah, we're going to have a big party. Oh, yeah, we're going to have a band. We're going all out, right? So I'm looking at the calendar, and actually one of my buddies said, no, your birthday's on a Sunday this year. I'm like, no, you're wrong. You must be looking at the wrong month. It's a Saturday. No, Mark, it's a Sunday. And I'm like, oh, it's a leap year. Can you believe that? Anyway, so it kind of works out well because at midnight on Saturday, my birthday will begin. So it'll even be a longer celebration. So I found out about an interesting web series and a new show coming to TV a couple weeks ago. And I want to bring it to you because for many reasons. Number one, I was exposed to the field of disabilities, especially with athletics, about 10 years ago or so when I was working with a company called We Media, W-E Media. They were the first magazine, glossy magazine for people with disabilities. And then it evolved quickly into the first website for people with disabilities. And it was a phenomenal community. I actually kind of, I read about this magazine and I had them on my radio show at a different radio station. And I had the CEO and founder and on there. And I had such a great connection with him on many levels that we turned the microphone off. I said to him, listen, you need to have a radio show on your website. He goes, yes, you're right. Can you do it? I said, absolutely. So we established a great relationship. So I did a radio show for them on their website. But more importantly, I had a great position there, pretty much where I'd say 2 out of the 4 weekends every month, I would fly to a different or drive to a different destination and interview incredible athletes that run the gamut in disabilities. Dual amputees, quadriplegics, you name it, doing extraordinary things. And these are athletes who are just everyday people looking to do what they love to do, exercise, partake in sport. I mean, there's no greater feeling than that. Whatever your disability is, whether you don't have an apparent one, when you create and or participate in sport, after you go for a jog even, or for a run or a bike ride or a swim, any form of exercise just makes you feel just rejuvenated. And of course, all the scientific reasons, medical reasons, you know, neurotransmitters, et cetera, et cetera. But imagine being able-bodied, meaning you didn't have a major disability, and then you get injured. And you think, wow, that's it. My life is over. Especially if you're a professional, were a professional athlete prior to your accident. It's a really a major, major change in lifestyle. You know, it just hits you over the head. So anyway, so I was working with this company and I just felt completely in love. And I just want to share one quick story with you. That once I was at, I think it was the Paralympic trials for Sydney. And I forget where we were, maybe down in Baltimore area somewhere. And I'd interviewed, I don't know, maybe 20, 30, 40 people that day. And I just could not get to this one gentleman, or maybe I didn't meet him that time during the track and field events, et cetera. So later that day, we're in the hotel bar, you know, crowded, elbow to elbow, wheelchair to crutches of all the athletes and sponsors, et cetera, having a great time. This one guy came up to me. He goes, hey, I'd really like to be interviewed. I said, hey, totally love to interview you and hear your story, et cetera, et cetera. Where are you going to be next? We realized we wouldn't be traveling in the same circles. He said to me, can we do it now? I said, I can't do it now. I'm inebriated. I was honest with the guy. I said, listen, I can't interview you right now on tape, on film, because, you know, I've had a few cocktails here. I've been in the sun all day long. I can't do it. So he was just on me all night long. And it wasn't annoying because, I mean, it was just so important for him to get the word out how much it changed his life. So he even said to me, I said to him, okay, what can we do? Okay, I had to get on a plane in the morning. I said, can you come back in the morning? You know, we'll do it first thing in the morning. We'll do a quick interview, you know, because it's obviously going to be late night here. And he said, no, I can't get back here. I'm like, all right. So we finally came up with the idea with, he's going to sleep on my couch. I had a suite. So here we are. This is hysterical. I don't know what time it is. Maybe 2-3 o'clock in the morning. We're rolling up to the hotel room. The guy who's the cameraman is asleep in the bed. I think I'm asleep on one couch and this other guy is asleep on the other couch. And all of a sudden I realize, oh my God, it's a few hours later. I got to wake this guy up. I got to catch a plane. So I wake him up and I do probably the worst interview of my life because we were both incredibly hungover, or actually not even hungover, you know, maybe 2 or 3 hours later. So the alcohol was still properly flowing in every channel of my body. Anyway, so the point is that he was just so dead set on getting his story out. And it did air. You know, I had to do a little work on it, to say the least. But the point is that there's so many great stories out there, and this is just the beginning of what you're going to hear from today. So my first guest today is Dara Padwell-Ottewick, and she has served as an executive producer for Discovery Studios, producing programs for Discovery HD Theater, Science Channel, Animal Planet, and Dara has also served as producer and director for National Geographic, great program, a television and National Geographic channel. Her programs and series have appeared on Animal Planet. Love that channel. CBS, Discovery, ESPN, Fox, Lifetime, Outdoor Life, PBS, and all over the internet. And she's a series producer and writes for She's Got Grit. This is a new show, which I told you about at the head of the show, on female athletes with disabilities who compete at the highest level, and I think it's outstanding. Dara, welcome to the show.
Hello there. Oh, thank you for having me.
You have a sexy morning voice, Dara.
Thank you.
You're laughing like you've never been told that before.
For you.
So this is such a great concept. You know I love it even before I even saw it, because it takes two things that I love, people and sport, and marries them. So what made you come up with this epiphany? What was it?
Well, it's funny. I was interested in this since 2009 when I was working on a project actually for the Department of Labor. And it ties into what you were saying earlier. I was listening to you, and I jotted down some notes. But, you know, there are a lot of people in this country who have disabilities, as you say, who could be contributing to the workforce and who could be contributing to our society in a much broader way if we just understood what disability really means, because I think we misperceive it in our culture.
So true.
But anyway, so I was working for the Department of Labor on a project about hiring people with disabilities in the workforce. And I got to see a variety of disabilities and how people were adapting their lives to them and what they were actually capable of doing. And that inspired me to think more about the concept of disability in our culture. And then later on, I was doing another series for AARP's Life Reimagined project, and I interviewed a guy by the name of Kirk Bauer, who runs Disabled Sports USA.
Amazing individual.
He is. And he's the one who really got me thinking about sport and disability. And as you say, we all need to exercise. You know, exercise is a way for us to integrate our mind, our bodies, our spirit. And athletes know this, and they know it to, I think, a level that most people don't really get to experience. But we all can tap in to what exercise and sport can give us. And so that intrigued me a lot, based on my conversation with Kirk and what he said he saw over his years of working with people with disabilities who were exercising and learning new sports or going back to old sports that they used to do. And then I've always been interested in sport. I did some work for CBS Sports and ESPN X Games, and I love athletes. I love the way they think. I love the way they look at life. And I think we have a lot to learn from people who devote their lives to training and becoming really good at something.
Absolutely. Well said, Dara. Tell me about your first experience witnessing an athlete or a team of athletes participating in disabled sports and how you felt.
So I've seen now a variety of different sports, but I have to say the biggest impact that I just had was recently when I saw a wheelchair basketball game, and I saw Andrea Woodson-Smith playing on a male team. And I can't even explain the way that I felt when I was watching it.
I can hear it in your voice, though.
So she was one of two female players on this male team, and she is a Paralympic wheelchair basketball player. She's been to several Olympics. She's exceptional, and she actually teaches in North Carolina, and we're about to do a longer profile of her, which is why we were at this game. But what I saw was an immense amount of passion, an incredible amount of skill. But the thing that blew me away, honestly, was the generosity of teamwork. I've never seen that kind of generosity of teamwork ever before in sport.
It's almost like they're just so elated, completely happy to be there and doing what they're doing. They would do anything to stay there.
That's right. And the way they were supporting each other, even people on the opposite team, was so moving. But also, for me, it's a metaphor, right? I mean, it wasn't just the game. It's a metaphor for how we can collaborate with each other in life if we just let down our ego.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said. Yeah, and you know what I like about, we're going to get into the episodes, but they're all unique. You know, some profile the life or the training support networks, and some of the episodes focus on a philosophy of an individual athlete. So it's really interesting, the formula changes, which is certainly in this day and age you have to do. And with your background as an award-winning writer, producer, and director, you know, you have great chops. And even the title, She's Got Grit, I mean, that caught my attention. Like, She's Got Grit. I mean, there's something there. So it really immediately lured me into it. And the production value is great. So I think you're off to a great start.
Well, we really appreciate that. And actually, She's Got Grit is a dream of myself and Tricia Downing, who is our series host. And Tricia has been an athlete all of her life. She's also a journalist, and she lost the use of her legs as she was cycling 12 years ago and was hit by a car, so she's now in a wheelchair. But she has returned to hand cycling. She's an amazing cyclist, and she does triathlons, and she trains, and she's also a motivational speaker. But She's Got Grit was essentially our brainstorm. We went back and forth and back and forth, and that's what hit for us. It was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because it works on a lot of levels. It's not just the grit of training and doing your best in a competition, but it's sticking to your goals. It's having a vision, seeing it, and just working at it.
Sure, the fortitude, absolutely.
The fortitude.
Now, how was it that you decided, and was this something along with Tricia that you decided to focus primarily, only I should say, exclusively on women, which I absolutely love? I would like to have a show focused only on women, but that's another subject.
So that for me, and I know Tricia's all about this, but for me, it actually, I was inspired by the Gina Davis Institute on Gender and Media. I went to a panel where Gina Davis was talking about her research and the work of her organization. And there has been very little forward movement for girls in media in 6 decades, especially in our country. Believe it or not, we're actually behind a lot of other countries, including Asia. And it struck me that for every 3 men who are on screen, there's only 1 woman. And that woman is not portrayed realistically or in a human light. In other words, she's portrayed as a bitch, or she's portrayed as a sex object. She's not a real person.
Incredible.
So that struck me. Then I did a little more research on women with disabilities, and I found that women with disabilities face double discrimination based on gender and discrimination based on their disability. And if you look at the coverage of Paralympic sport, you very, very infrequently see anything about the female athletes.
And not only that, aren't they paid a fraction of what the male athletes are?
They are. So that's, again, this double discrimination.
Now, I think something like this, okay, this is a little bit of a sidebar here, but I think something like that could change if even the men stepped up, because obviously this is sponsor-related. Stepped up and you know, said, listen, equal or no.
You know, and the men, as they're seeing what we're doing, have been incredibly supportive of what we're doing. I can't tell you how many people are stepping forward and saying, we love this concept, we love what you're doing, how can we help? And that's women and men. It's time for the change.
Absolutely. And you also feature Hannah Pennington. I believe she was in the former Paralympian, correct?
She is, and we have a number of them in the works. So we're doing a segment on McKenna Dahl, who's Paralympic shooter. We're working on the wheelchair basketball segment with Andrea Woodson-Smith. We're going to do a segment on Paralympic sailing and Jen French's program, which is warrior sailing, which is a really interesting new project that she's doing with warrior sailors and training wounded warriors and disabled athletes to sail. Very interesting project that she's doing. We have a segment on the track nationals, so cycling.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's my
so
sport.
We're really covering lots of different sports. But I'll tell you something, even though it's the sports are different, these women all have the same spirit. They're dedicated, they're passionate. And what I'm seeing, too, again, this spirit of generosity, is they're all giving back. On top of everything they're doing, they're all giving back.
Sure. Joining me on the phone is Dara Padua-Ottowick. She's a series producer and writer for She's Got Grit, a new show featuring elite athletes with disabilities. Tell me your viewpoint on general society and their viewpoint of disabled sports. And I ask this because of two points. Number one, of who you are and what you do for a living. Be working with major networks, and also recently more of a fan of sports. You think it's obviously the networks and or cable channels who just do a poor job of covering or a lack of coverage at all?
I think they do a poor job of covering and lack of coverage because I think there's a misunderstanding about disability in our culture. And I think that these disabled athletes are seen as separate from the rest of the athletic community, and they're really not. But I think that's because we perceive disability as separate from in general. I don't think we understand it. I think we're afraid of it.
And describe how you felt. You did describe, actually, during the basketball game. And I can kind of step in here because the first time I saw athletic competition, and it doesn't matter. It could be a bunch of teenagers recreating with disabilities to elite athletes. But the synergy and the complete awe I was in, I mean, I couldn't shut up about it. I think when I came home, whoever, you know, my girlfriend or family at the time were like, oh, my God, this is incredible. We have to see this. I mean, how it opens your eyes, again, to what you just alluded to, just the fact of the camaraderie, the athleticism, and the fact that they're having so much fun and that they work together. You know, forget about all these other major sports and multi-million-dollar contracts and drug use and, you know, being arrested for murder charges or spouse abusal. I mean, it's disgusting. And then when you look at this disciplinary, these elite athletes, it's so refreshing.
It really is. And you're pointing to sort of a larger systemic problem, right? And and you talked about it earlier. I was listening to you before you brought me on. You were talking about this idea of selfies and being narcissistic. You know, what you're talking about relates to this concept, right? If we see ourselves as silos and not connected, then how in the world can we move forward as a society? And really grow and really do good things. I think that we've done very well in terms of our forward movement, in terms of technology, And you can actually see that in sport, you know, in terms of adaptations in technologies, for instance, in disabled sports.
Absolutely.
But emotionally, we have some growing to do.
A wee bit.
A wee bit. Yeah.
So you've interviewed a lot of great athletes, and I'm sorry, and also Tricia Downing, the host, and also the other host.
So Nicole DeBoom is our co-host, and she's actually able-bodied. She is an Ironman champion, which is pretty amazing.
Phenomenal.
Yes, phenomenal. And Tricia actually did the Ironman as a hand cyclist. I mean, that's another amazing story. But so Nicole DeBoom is Ironman champion, and she is our co-host. And we picked her, one, because she and Tricia have a great rapport, but two, because she's not afraid to ask deep questions and to think outside of the box.
Good. I have a deep question for you. And maybe this has been asked by Nicole or... sorry, Tricia. I can't read my own notes today. Or yourself. This has always been a sticking point for me. It really, really bothers me. The Paralympics always follow the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And it drives me nuts because everything we just talked about could be changed drastically by just altering the schedule. What's your viewpoint of that?
I agree. And Tricia and I actually talked about it, and they talked about it on camera when we did our first segment. You know, what is She's Got Grit and what is this really all about? Or even, I mean, I understand that, you know, the model is set up the way that it is and it's hard to break old traditions, but why not intersperse the sports a little more? You know, start there.
You know what? Even, yes, I agree, but I think that's something that they would really be intimidated to breach right now. But even as a way to ramp up. Obviously, you know, you're building a venue. We're going to, Rio next for the Summer Games. So obviously you get an inundated state of tens of thousands of people just for athletes alone and coaches and staff and medical, et cetera. So what a better way to maybe start it with a ramping up of a smaller scale event, because the Paralympics are much smaller in scale all across the board. But what a greater way logistically to find out if we need to tweak something before, 2 weeks later, the whole gargantuan Olympic, you know, team and everything about it, you know, comes down upon, what's the word I'm looking for? Settles, involves, vades, whatever, comes to the city. What greater way to ramp it up and see what works and doesn't work, even if you want to look at it at that viewpoint?
That's a great idea. That's a wonderful idea. I love that.
Yeah, so it really bothers me because I think that's just a great way to find out to open the door for, you know, a nation and for nations to see what sport can do for people with disabilities. And
I think it comes down to sponsorship, though. You know, so again, that's going to be changing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as we've brought back more wounded warriors and we have a growing number of people with physical, mental disabilities in our culture after wars. The population is larger and our whole society needs to shift. It's not something we've seen before.
Mm, sure, sure.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. And speaking of sponsorships, it would be good. Maybe I have all these ideas here. You're a person I'd love to throw them out to because listenership, I'm sure, would appreciate it because it is, you know, maybe it's not prime time worthy. People are going to consider that not prime time worthy. Okay. Well, then stream it live on, you know, CBS.com or whoever's going to be carrying it this year. And because it's kind of an insult to show it in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
The Paralympics. Anyway, so moving on.
We agree. We agree with you. We'd like to see that change.
So
we're trying to make, you know, do our part.
You are. You're creating a great product. And one of the products I want to talk about, one of the segments is about prosthetics. And it's very fascinating to find what goes into a prosthesis. And the prosthetist, it sounds like they're doing something illegal, of course. I want to be a prosthetist, Mom. What? Are you kidding me? My God, their job is just so, so arduous and challenging. But the art of making a leg below the knee, above the knee, or a complete, you know, hip down to the foot, and the technology involved And the explanation that went involved, that was accompanying it by Tricia, was just fascinating. And I think it would just open so many people's eyes and will open people's eyes when it airs.
Well, thank you for that. And that, Zach Harvey of Creative Technology was kind enough to bring us into their organization in Denver to show us how prostheses are made. And it was very eye-opening. And the technology is changing rapidly. And I just want to throw this out to your younger listeners who are trying to figure out what to do with their lives. Great field to go into. Great field. It's a combination of art and science.
And being a doctor.
And being a doctor.
Bedside manner.
And
huge.
Exactly. And really helping people and really working with people in an amazing way. So we did that segment because people don't understand how they're made, but we also did it because of what I just said. I think it's a great field for young people to look at, and it's a growing field.
Now, speaking of growing, She's Got Grit needs some money.
Yes, we do.
So you're soliciting funds, and is this still happening online?
It is. So we raised some money on Indiegogo, and we're actually about to do an auction through Charity Buzz with experiences. Like, you can learn how to hand cycle with Tricia. You can ski
nice.
With a Paralympic skier. I mean, we have some great experiences on Charity Buzz coming up. But on shesgotgrit.com, we have a fundraising page, and we are linked with a fiscal sponsor so that your donations are tax deductible. Which is a really great thing for everyone.
Well,
and all you have to do is click on the link on She's Got Grit.
Fantastic. And that's shesgotgrit.com. Now, do you have plans with your fellow host, to go to the Paralympics?
We are building up to that. So right now what we're doing is we're telling stories leading up to the Paralympics. Mm-hmm. And if we can raise enough funds, then we will go.
So ultimately, where would you like to see this She's Got Grit land?
Right now, we think it's perfect for a digital platform to partner with us. We are self-distributing at the moment, but we would love to have a larger digital partner. But ultimately, I also see this as a longer piece. So we would compile the work that we're doing together into a longer episode for broadcast.
Now, I see this as I love the shows on sports shows on Showtime and HBO. I think they're so well done, and I think this formula would work exquisitely well there. Now, of course, you're biased as well, but being a seasoned professional in that field, do you agree?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I think it'd be awesome for like an ESPNW.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, I think that would be a fantastic platform for it. I also see it, once we do a longer piece, it could be something that actually goes on a Discovery or a public broadcasting or an OWN. I think OWN would be a great platform for this.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a no-brainer. Now, would you consider, or have you considered and or interviewed, from what I gather, you do a lot of elite professional athletes. Would you be producing any footage on or interviews of up-and-coming?
Yes, that's a great question. So, yes. So, interspersed with our professional athletes, we have some up-and-coming athletes. And as you mentioned before, people who are sort of doing this, everyday people, but who are really good at it. Mm-hmm. And are competing in their towns and cities or, you know, smaller events, we're profiling those people, too.
So with all the work you've done, again, your award-winning writer, producer, director, your shows have aired, you know, countless networks, some great quality programming. Is this one of the most gratifying project you've worked on?
It really is. It really is one of the most gratifying projects. And like I said, so right now we have a team of people working on this, and everyone is just as passionate about it as I am. And everyone is giving their time and creative efforts to make this work because we all just think it's a great thing. But like I said, there's that generosity of spirit, and I see it across the board with the athletes, with my team, with everybody who's involved and touches this project, and that is very gratifying.
Well, it's got a lot of grit. It certainly does, and so do you.
Well, thank you. you.
Dara Padwell-Audick, a series producer for She's Got Grit. It's shesgotgrit.com, shesgotgrit.com, and the link is on there also for contributions, correct?
Yes, it is.
Fantastic.
On our fundraising tab.
Hey, when you develop a He's Got Grit, I want to be there front and center.
Okay. Because
right now I got game, but I don't have grit.
Okay.
Okay, all the best to you. Talk to you soon, Dara.
Thank you very much.
All the best to you. Cheers. This is Insight on PR Again, the Progressive Radio Network. Gary Null is coming up in a few minutes, but I want to turn the story to Homes of New York. This is kind of a wildly popular Facebook page. And there was recently a post about a man who went to high school with a woman who always complained about having anxiety. Now, anxiety, if you've had it, you know totally what it is. It's probably one of the most uncomfortable. It's not something like having your appendix out or something of that nature, but it is very, very uncomfortable. Sometimes your mind just races. It's disorienting, kind of clouds your ability to think clearly. You just can't relax. It's very, very uncool to have in a nutshell. I don't wish it upon my, you know, worst enemy. So he said recently in a post, because he experienced anxiety lately. And from someone myself who has experienced a lot of anxiety in life, after my brother died by suicide, I had a lot of anxiety, panic attacks, and they're just, man, this riddles your whole body. It just freaks you out. I break out in full body sweats, totally, totally uncomfortable. You think your world is ending. You think you're losing your mind. So here this guy writes on wildly popular Humans of New York that he always made fun of this woman in high school who always claimed that she had anxiety. And, you know, again, a lot of people, and me included, before my brother died by suicide, you know, I didn't know much about mental health. You don't know much about alcoholism until you're faced with it, or someone in your family has it, or a friend, or maybe loss of a child, whatever the case may be. Until you're exposed to something, we can't say we're ignorant. We're just not educated. Ignorance is a different term. It's if you choose not to be educated. So recently, it was kind of nice to read about this, that he actually reached out to this woman he went to high school with, who suffered a great deal from anxiety, and apologized to her. You know, I don't know how the conversation went. You know, it's like, who? You're calling me now? You made fun of me when and for how long? You know what that did to me? How many hours I had to spend in a therapist chair? How much money I spent? Who knows? But the case is, the fact is that, you know, anxiety doesn't take judgment. It is not biased. It can affect anybody at any time. And just like depression, they say chances are in your lifetime, you're going to have one bout of depression in your lifetime. And then, you know, it's pretty serious. You'll get through it, with the help of family, friends, and professionals. But it's pretty interesting that, you know, that this person who, I'm sure this is not unique, but the fact that he publicized it is nice. It's eye-opening. Because, again, it's something that I experienced, and, you know, I couldn't sleep. Really, really makes you feel uncomfortable. The upside was that when I went to the gym, because I wanted to kind of keep my normal pattern of, you know, lifestyle, I was able to lift more weight than I had never lifted before, because the adrenaline, man, it's always pumping in your body. As a matter of fact, I was lifting so much weight, I'm like, you know what, I better stop, because I don't know what I was doing, benching or dips. I think I was doing dips. I was doing like 4, 5, 6 sets of like 15, 20 reps. I'm like, my God, I'm just probably going to tear my pecs apart. I better just stop, because, again, all this adrenaline running through your body. And adrenaline's good. It's obviously, it's a fight or flight syndrome type of scenario, which we know about. But anxiety in general, it's good to a certain degree. But to have it all the time is really, really horrifying. And when I do my talks on mental health, overcoming adversity, when I speak to schools, whatever the audience may be, 8th graders or high school or college or corporate, it's something that, you know, it's really eye-opening when you hear someone tell stories about how it really impacts your life. Because I remember the first time I felt it, it was unlike anything I ever felt, and describing this feeling of feeling this really, really physical sensation taking over your body. Like I was like, you know how you get pins and needles, your hand, your leg. I felt like a whoosh, whoosh through my whole body. I was like, what was that? It's almost like, you know, like a plane goes over your head. You're like, whoa, holy Jesus. That's what I felt like. So it's interesting to see that. And more talk is about this. There's also a great website I want to tell you about. It's called The Mighty, M-I-G-H-T-Y, themighty.com. Post a lot of great information about disabilities, mental illness, you name it, across the board, geared for parents, individuals, couples. It's just, and it's done by professionals in the industry of TV, arts, copywriting, agencies, ad agencies, etc. Really well done. TheMighty.com. Great information on there. And they also have a weekly email that goes out highlighting certain stories for your review. So I hope you enjoyed the show today. Dara is also, she's working on a great project. She's got grit. I wish herself and her colleagues all the best of luck. It's at she'sgotgrit.com, she'sgotgrit.com. Dara Padwick-Audwick, seasoned award-winning writer, producer, and director. We thank her for her time. And next week, I am going to be not here. You're going to be hearing the best of me, if there is such a thing, the best of me. I'm actually speaking in Atlantic City to hopefully thousands of people. I think it is 1,002 people on overcoming adversity. For more information about my talks or have me speak at your corporation school, check my website out at markfarrellmotivation.com, markfarrellmotivation.com. Always special thanks to our engineer and producer extraordinaire, Jesse, and to our program director, Jason Taubenfeld. Mark Farrell, the show's insight, PRN.FM. For any shows that you want to hear, this particular one, if you didn't catch the early part of the show or if you want to listen to it on repeat because you can't hear it enough. Have a great day.